superstitious. That's what we're always talking about, superstitions. And today we've got a very, very special show with the Vintager talking about superstitions on stones. That's right. So here I am with the Vintager himself, the one and only Jeff Eller. How are you doing today, Jeff?
Just wonderful. I'm glad to be here with you another week.
Well, it was iffy, folks, but yes, he is here with us again today. And in honor of Halloween, we thought, what better time to talk about some of the superstitions, legends, stories about gemstones that we all have heard. We're not really going to be Mythbusters, but we are going to talk about some of these superstitions. So, what do you want to talk about today, Jeff?
Well, we're going to start off with silver.
Silver. Are there superstitions to silver?
Actually, silver probably has some of the oldest superstitions.
Yes.
From various cultures around the world, silver has always been a talisman. And we're talking about against vampires, werewolves. Now, the concept of werewolf is pretty much Western European, but the The Chinese had their own version. I'll just wait till the werewolf gets killed.
All right, I'm sorry, folks. I'll try to behave, but, you know, it just comes out.
All right.
Helping you out, Jeff.
Yeah. What was I talking about?
Werewolves.
Okay. Anyhow, silver in the demise of the vampires, the werewolves, and the demons, and just general protection, Middle Ages, and actually Roman times through the Middle Ages, single women wore silver earrings to protect them from temptation.
Women wore these earrings to protect them from temptation.
Yeah, men were already in. They were dogs. Women got to be protected.
And then we could play Who Let the Dogs Out? Yes, okay.
But the church went so far as to consecrate silver crosses. And at one time, all the bishops and all the people in the clergy, the Catholic clergy, that is, wore silver crosses now at the 1400s. You had Martin Luther came along, and actually the Franciscan order started wearing the wooden crosses to show their humility, but silver crosses were always big. And if you ever notice in the vampire movies, you put that silver cross on the vampire's head, you got him.
Well, maybe the Franciscans were trying to prove that they truly believed.
Well, that could be true, but also you use a wooden stake to kill a vampire, got to...
Well, the crosses didn't have pointed ends, though, did they?
I don't believe so. Now, the... concept of silver being a talisman against these demons and things goes back to Egyptian times.
Egyptian times?
Well, Egyptians believed that a silver talisman, the amulet around the neck, would ward off any other unknown gods and goddesses that weren't particularly welcome in their sphere.
Hmm. Interesting.
Yeah.
Okay.
Quite interesting.
So, and today?
Today, we still do it.
We still wear it, yeah.
Let's face it, the legend of the Lone Ranger was, you know, the silver bullets to kill the bad guys.
There you go.
We still do it. We still have people that wear the silver crosses. They may not acknowledge why, but they have some vague feeling that it has some specific powers. Mm-hmm. And one of the things, you know, the vampires can't be seen in a mirror, right?
Yes.
Well, the first mirrors...
I see nothing.
...were Chinese mirrors. which were polished silver.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, and the Romans' mirrors, I've seen people bring in pictures of, and actually have around this, they thought were silver platters or plates, but they were polished mirrors.
How about that?
So, it still has the connotative ability to sort out the vampires.
That's right. And of course, this is an antique silver mirror that is part of
the
purse
set. Well, you have two benefits. You have the mirror part and you have the silver part. If it does, you know, you put it on the table for your date and he doesn't show up in the damn mirror, you whack him with the silver.
One thing about being married to Jeff Eller over all these years, I've learned some of the most interesting things.
Yeah,
and
you
still
might...
I'm here.
You wonder why I required you to carry the mirror to the lunches with these people? Well,
Now you know. Now, you also have some silver dollars here. Is that just to symbolize silver and that we have a bunch here?
Well, it's to symbolize that one of the first monies was silver. The two first monies found in the world were copper and silver. Gold was always there, but not in the realm that silver and copper were. And at the ancient times, silver had a specific rate of exchange to gold, the same as today.
Silver to gold, the relationship to price?
The silver to gold relationship to price, until recently, I'll put it that way. It used to be 16 to 1 here in the United States. It went to 32 to 1 in the 1932. And then, of course, that pegging stopped in 1964. But you got to think that it lasted 2,000 in Western civilization years, and it was another couple of 3,000 prior to Western civilization.
1964 was significant. Is that when we went off the gold standard?
That's when we went off the gold standard.
That's
which automatically meant we went off the silver standard.
Wow. And today, I mean, back in 1964, the price of gold was what, $35 an ounce?
$32 an ounce.
And look at it today. And one of the questions that always crosses my mind and is a legend, or is it truth, is there really gold in Fort Knox?
Well, supposedly there is, but the Federal Reserve Bank in New York supposedly holds 10 times what Fort Knox ever thought about holding.
Mm-hmm. But has anybody been in to do an inventory of it?
Well, you haven't been invited to, and
no,
you tried.
I have tried, and supposedly it is sealed with wax. But how do we know that it is the same wax seal the last time it was sealed? And how do we know that some of the bars have not been removed to cash in to send to Iran? I don't know. I'm just saying. Hey, I'm Ann Eller right here with The Vintager, bringing up another legend, rumor, or truth.
Want to go on the gold or not now?
Well, since I'm into gold, I think that would be great.
Well, gold was probably the first metal worked by man. And it what did not start out being worked as jewelry, but pretty soon, adornments going all the way back to 4,000 and 5,000 years ago, adornments of gold were used. And one of the first things people used gold for was in their teeth.
For fillings.
Fillings.
Or for adornment, which was it? Or
probably
decoration.
Both. They made grills long before grills were ever popular here recently.
By the way, most of those grills are not gold.
No, they're fake.
Right. Just for the record, if you see somebody and you think, my God, they spent all this fortune, they probably spent a pretty good penny, but it's not real gold.
No, that's one of the ripoffs of the modern era is the fake grills.
Yeah. Okay, so what else can you tell us about gold? It was used in teeth?
Used in teeth, used as a trade barter that had a universal price to product relationship across the world.
In fact, when you talk about the bot chains from...
The bot chains from Thailand, Vietnam, Laos, and that area were one link of chain equaled a monetary unit. You had the Roman equivalent to a bot chain, which was the Roman link, which is pretty apropos name, which had a monetary unit equivalent. The Spanish carried this even further when they started finding all the gold in the New World in their particular gold chains and set it up. The Portuguese set up the standard rate of exchange of gold and silver for the Middle Ages.
Well, you were talking about coins. In the Roman times, they had the coins that have been refound here in, over the last few years.
Well, the Roman coins pretty much followed the modern-day coins. They had copper coins, they had silver coins, they had an amalgam of copper and silver, and they had gold coins.
And they usually had the emperor, correct?
Usually, the first cameo metal cameos were, of course, used for coins.
That's right.
And it was a way of the emperor getting his PR out, really.
Yeah. So, interesting as far as that. So, coins throughout history, how far back do coins go?
The earliest coins are about 5,000 years old.
Well, and we think we're so inventive in today's world, don't we? We do, yeah.
Most of the forms. And one of the other things is that, you know, the people that wear copper to relieve arthritis or, mm-hmm. or bone problems, mm-hmm. one of the earliest medical things, which was in the Greeks codified everything, so did the Egyptians, as far as they go, was the use of copper, wearing the copper to relieve pain.
Wow. And so it must have worked back then.
You know, people say, well, it can't work, that's a myth, but funny thing about that myth, it's hung around for 4,000 or 5,000 years.
I know people that swear by it.
I do too.
Yeah.
I mean, it's got to have some valuation because people wouldn't be using it thousands of years later.
Very interesting.
Yeah.
So, now the bot chains, those are those little link chains that you see, and actually people would wear their money, wear their wealth right around their neck, right?
One thing for sure, they didn't wear it in New York.
But this was also a long time
right.
ago where this was. But and what I
actually they still had bot chains when I was in Vietnam.
Well, we've seen bot chains, yes, since we've been together. I tell you one of the other things that I always thought was very interesting. It did not matter whether you were in a rice paddy or whether you were in a city, wherever you were, they always knew how much one bot of gold was, what the trading value.
1 ounce of gold. There's nowhere I've ever been in the world that, no matter how mean the circumstances were, that miner or that individual there didn't know exactly what the price of gold was.
Exactly. Which it's phenomenal. How would they know?
I've never really sit down and try to analyze it, but I know that no matter where I was ever at in Brazil, they knew the price of gold that day. And we're talking about jungle, not talking about modern day with the internet and all of that and the satellite communications. I'm talking about when you showed up in a damn riverboat and got off and the first thing they told you was how much they were willing to pay for gold.
And when you were in Vietnam.
Yeah.
I mean, in
they had no problem.
Phenomenal, isn't it, folks?
I thought we'd go on to the connection of gold and God.
Okay. We've got a couple minutes here, and then it'll be
well,
time.
Well, the connection of gold and God goes all the way back to biblical times.
Okay.
It's throughout the Bible. It's throughout the Greek legends. It's throughout the Roman deities. It's throughout the Egyptian deities. if you wanted to curry a God's favor, you put a little gold on him. And supposedly that God would shower you with his protection, his gifts, his well-being, his total immersion in your society was based on how much gold you could put on that statue.
Well, didn't they bring the baby Jesus gold?
Yes.
I mean, just think about that in the manger. That was one of the gifts, right?
One of the first gifts, one of the constant gifts throughout the Bible and through Western history.
That's right.
And Eastern history. And Middle Eastern history.
So there must be something to the legend of gold. Do you have gold? Do you need cash? Well, come see us here at Sharp Facets Gallery. Except not this afternoon. We are live right here with my very own vintager, the one and only Jeff Eller. We're going to be talking more about legends, superstitions. We're going to be talking about emeralds, amethyst, pearls, turquoise. You name it, they all have some value here and a myth that I hope you're going to stay tuned for, because we're going to come back right after the news. So keep it right here on WCRS with the Vintager and me, Ann Eller.
Gold, gold, more precious than any other time in history. Do you have gold? Do you need cash? Then bring it to SFG. That's Sharp Facets Gallery, 1220 Bypass 72 Greenwood. Telephone 229-6613. Don't forget, we buy diamonds too. Paying the highest prices for your gold and diamonds at Sharp Facets Gallery.
Ah, those were the days, folks. That's right. We're right here at WCRS, right here at Sharp Facets Gallery. We are closed on Wednesday afternoons, which gives us the opportunity to get together with the vintager, Jeff Eller, right here on WCRS. We've got some gemstones and stuff we're going to talk about. So what are we going to talk about now on these superstitions?
We're going to talk about the origins of superstitions and how long they've been around and how little they've changed. Mm. One of the things that most people do not realize is that second only to good axe in the Bible is a mention of various gemstones and the utility.
Okay.
One of the first things that you notice about any historical document is usually somewhere in there some mention of gemstones and the properties of that particular gemstone, medicinal or spiritual. And we're talking about everything from early Egyptians to the Roman times and right up through medieval times and to present times. Now, one of the things people may or may not know is that working with crystals and gemstones has been the driving force of early technology. The first thing came about was the potter's wheel. The potter's wheel soon morphed into a gem polishing machine that changed very little between ancient Egyptian and Greek times to modern times, except instead of foot power, we used a little motor. But the technology is very similar. One of the other things is that using gemstones identify various nationalities and or tribal units. The 12 tribes of Israel each had its own gemstone for recognition. Pretty easy to recognize somebody when you didn't have name tags. Well, how would you know who they were associated with, and what they were associated with is because they had that gemstone capability of being identified. Worn usually by men, almost exclusively by men, and we're talking about everything from the Israelis to the Indians to Indians to the Romans to the Greeks. Medieval times, you could not wear a ruby or any kind of gemstone unless you're with the clergy or royalty.
So
it made it
stone.
Pretty easy to recognize who was who.
Who was in charge.
Right.
Yeah.
You knew who was there. the Shield of Aaron with its 12 tribes that it also morphed into birthstones. And each birthstone has a particular power. Now, one of the first and most valuable stones, of course, was ruby. And ruby, the red ruby, became the ruby of war, of leadership. And before we had all this ambient light, and you could look up in the skies and see true colors of the planets and things, you'd see the ruby red Mars, the god of war. The ruby was big in Roman times, super big. It was probably even bigger in the Indian subcontinent, from Burma to into China, and across all of India, was the concept that ruby has specific powers. And the powers for those people was that it warded off things like assassins.
Okay, that's good.
It warded off bad times through wartime. I mean, it had specific things that it promoted.
You know, we always think that diamond is like the most expensive gemstone. But one of the things that I always found fascinating was the fact that if you had a 2-carat ruby, a 2-carat diamond, and what, a 2-carat
emerald,
the ruby would be the most expensive if they were all top quality stones.
If they were all the best of the best, rubies always been the top quality, top price.
And I guess that's why they call it the King of Gems?
The King of Gems.
Yes.
I mean, from everybody, every European princeling, if they had a crown, they had a ruby.
Which brings up an interesting point. The ruby in the crown jewels in England, was it a ruby?
Turned out to be a spinel.
There you go.
Same family type thing, but it had a little different in its chromium content.
But for years, they thought that it was a ruby.
That's true.
Yep.
And, you know, it's funny how the myths of what stones can produce what powers transcend all borders around the globe. Mm-hmm. For instance, turquoise was believed to the Persians and the Romans and the Egyptians and anything on the Saudi Arabian peninsula there, that it would keep your horse from stumbling.
That was pretty important.
Yeah, they would save you from falls.
Right.
So the Persians wore Persian turquoise all the time, and the Romans soon started incorporating it. Well, it transferred to medieval times, to where the knights always put it on the head plate of their horse, mm-hmm. so that the horse wouldn't stumble. Now, you take, that's a society that has no contact with the Americas, right?
Right.
The American Indian believed the same thing.
Oh, my God, it must be true, then.
It must be true.
I mean, if two
either
different...
Either that or aliens told them.
There are two divergent societies that have no contact were believing the same thing.
One of the other ones that people believed around the world is that emeralds would produce a kind of palliative for eye problems.
Hmm.
Yeah.
Wow.
And pearls have been an aphrodisiac around the world for the last couple hundred years,
mm-hmm.
a couple thousand years.
Okay.
I mean, let's face it, Cleopatra supposedly wouldn't have gotten Mark Antony if she didn't drop the pearl into the cup of wine.
That was such a great scene, wasn't it?
Yeah, yeah.
And it dissolved right there, right?
Yep.
And there you have the pearls. And... what else are pearls? Oh, pearls are supposed to, what was I reading today? Pearls would, if you put it under your pillow, would help a couple conceive.
Yep, that was part of it. And women wore pearls as a bridal thing to show purity. And Venus supposedly stepped forward from the pearl mollusk, dripping pearls.
Yes.
So pearls have been around for a while. And most people would be surprised. They think that Japan is a home market of all the world's pearls. Mm-hmm. Bahrain is. Hmm. I mean, you get off the airport there, off the plane at the airport in Bahrain, and the first thing you see is this huge statue. It's got to be about 60 foot high of a pearl. Because the big pearl market, long before there was ever cultured pearls in Japan, was the Middle East and Bahrain.
Wow.
And it is still there. If you want to buy the most expensive pearls in the world, that's where you go. Hmm. Now, on other things, the turquoise is actually our official national stone.
For our country?
For our country.
Oh, I never knew that. I didn't know we had official country stone.
Well, it's kind of like having official donuts, you know. It's, well, they're there, but how many people ever think about it?
Yeah, but that, isn't that kind of weird, though, because how much turquoise actually comes out of the United States?
A lot.
A lot? Really?
Turquoise is the byproduct of copper ore.
Okay. So
turquoise and malachite are all found wherever there's copper. And we have the largest deposits of copper in the world right here in the United States.
In the world?
In the world.
Wow.
Now, we may not mine it nowadays because it's actually cheaper to build a mine without the regulations and everything in Indonesia or somewhere like that. But the copper's still here. It's still in the ground. It's still here.
How about that?
Yeah.
Copper.
Copper.
Which, and turquoise is a byproduct of copper.
It's a crystalline form of copper.
Wow.
And then so is malachite.
Yeah. Malachite, of course, is that green, looks like kind of an agate-type stone. I don't think we have any on the table, but malachite is that type of stone, real pretty
and
green stone.
Malachite was used for abdominal pain. And in actuality, it had some therapeutic value.
Well, they do, grind it up and drink it?
Ground it up. You know, quartz, the gem quartz, just pure quartz, this little ubiquitous stone has been used for medicinal values for since time immemorial almost. The Neanderthals were found with quartz crystals.
I feel smarter already.
Well, it's supposed to channel purity of thought.
Oh, well, never mind. I thought it was supposed to promote clear thinking. Quartz, yes.
It promoted it.
Yeah.
And the optical quartz would produce some of the finest first lenses.
Now, quartz was found in huge quantities in South Carolina.
South Carolina has the distinction of having some of the finest construction sand known to the world right here. I mean, we have a mining industry of sand.
And that, of course, comes from silica, which is from quartz.
It comes from quartz.
Yes.
Now, quartz is used almost in every application. The Egyptians crushed it up and used it as a abrasive to saw the big limestone chunks to build the pyramids with.
Wow.
Wow. The Romans took it a step further and learned to crush other non-gem quality stones to use as an abrasive, but quartz was the first.
How about that? Well, let's hear a quick word from our sponsors when we come back. You got more to talk about.
We do?
I think we do.
Okay.
So why don't you keep it here, right here on WCRS, right here in Greenwood. We'll be right back.
McDonald's presents Confessions of an Ex-Hipster.
I loved cappuccinos, so I put on an itchy turtleneck and grew a goatee. But before I knew it, I was into French films, indie rock, and not bathing. Luckily, I got help from McDonald's McCafe cappuccinos. Now I'm watching football, wearing khakis, even high-fiving again. Thank you, McDonald's.
New McCafe mochas, lattes, and cappuccinos from McDonald's. With fresh ground espresso and real steamed milk, it's all the coffee, hold the attitude. At participating McDonald's.
Visit your local McDonald's in Greenwood and Abbeville today.
Oh, those were the days, my friend, and that's why we have the Vintager with us on Wednesday afternoons. We talk about interesting things to do with jewelry, art, artifacts. We talk about all of this on this show, and today we're talking about superstitions and gemstones and lore. So we're going to continue talking here. By the way, if you're on Facebook with us, you can check out some of the pictures and videos that she's already uploaded. And of course, there'll be a complete upload on this show. So on Facebook, WCRS.AM Radio. On our website, we got it on Sharp Facets or WCRS? Sharp Facets, sharpfacetsgallery.com. We have a page dedicated to the Vintager. So you can check out all the stories, videos, etc. that we have up there. So check that out. That's sharpfacetsgallery.com. On Facebook, WCRS.AM Radio. And by the way, you can always join us on Facebook with Sharp Facets Gallery too. So, Mr. Vintager, Jeff, what would you like to talk about now?
I'd like to talk about the state's gemstone. For this state, it's amethyst.
Purple. February's birthstone.
Yes. It might as well have been smoky quartz because it was equally abundant. Mm-hmm. But we had some of the finest amethyst in the world right here in Due West, the largest known deposit on the North American continent is Due West, South Carolina.
That's right. In fact, they were going to build a college there, weren't they?
Washington Carver was going to mine the amethyst and use the profits from it to build his college here in Due West rather than where he ended up at Tuskegee.
That's right. And not only that, there's a 50-pound crystal in the Smithsonian and one in the Natural Museum of History, all from Due West, South Carolina. Plus, there is a nice amethyst crystal down at the governor's mansion right here in Columbia.
It is it's about 40 pounds, the one in the governor's mansion.
Wow. So,
It's huge.
Now, you can mine a couple other places, up to Antreville.
Antreville has it. If you use Due West as a hub of a wheel, and drew spokes out away from it to Antreville, to Iva, to a few other locations throughout the upstate here, you'd find amethyst pretty much in all of those. It's a ubiquitous stone for this area, not the rest of the state, but for this area. And out at Corn Acre, you have the smoky quartz. And we have some huge crystals from Corn Acre out there.
That's right. And, you know, they always call it smoky topaz, but it's actually most of the time smoky quartz.
I believe that started with mass merchandisers in the 30s calling it smoky topaz.
Now, when we used to do gemstones a lot, there was a real easy way to tell whether you had quartz or whether you had topaz. If you have quartz and you run your finger across it, you can literally cut your finger. Right. If you have topaz, you can't.
Right. It's on the crystals.
On the crystals, right.
Right. It's kind of neat that way.
Yeah, I cut my finger a lot when I was trying to prove points then. Yeah.
Well, the amethyst and smoky quartz or smoky topaz or brown quartz, pretty famous again the world over. And in Scotland, it's the national stone. Mm-hmm. In Italy, amethyst was always the stone of royalty and rank.
And it was also called the bishop's stone.
Well, the Catholic Church is set up with the same organizational hierarchy that the Roman army was set up under. And the Roman knights and the Romans started the concept of knighthood well before the English knights were ever even thought about being, and they carried that concept to England. But the Roman knights all had a single band of gold that showed their fealty to the Roman Empire and to the Senate. In the other hand, they were able to wear a amethyst ring.
Wow.
Yeah.
You know, the other thing that's rather interesting about amethyst for folklore is that amethyst was supposed to prevent drunkenness.
Well, the Greeks started that idea. They recognized early on that amethyst, clear quartz, and smoky quartz were one and the same. And they did that by doing optical prisms, which was thousands of years ahead of the use of it for bending light in present day. But they used it then for identifying the stones. And they found that that the concept of amethyst was used to cure hangovers, prevent extreme drunkenness, aid with stomach ailments. Mm-hmm. Now, the smoky was entirely different. The smoky was one of the first Viagras.
Oh, jeez, Jeff. Jeez.
Don't know how well it worked, but, you know.
You'll have people grinding up smoky quartz.
Well, actually, they
used... What did you do with it? Drink it? Don't tell us, please. Don't tell us. We don't need any more information here today. If you want to know more, talk to Jeff. There you go.
Well, they drank pearls.
They did drink pearls, yes.
Yeah. So, you know that? They didn't grind it up, though. They carried it in certain locations. Wow.
Well, I guess we have enough information there, Mr. Ellert.
All right.
Okay.
And those are all found right here in South Carolina.
You know, one of the things that you used to teach about gemstones and everything here in South Carolina, and one of the things that most people don't realize is how rich South Carolina is in gemstones.
Well, quite frankly, if it wasn't all private ownership or property, we would be the same as Brazil.
How about that? That is pretty amazing.
Yeah.
Sapphires.
You find sapphires here. You can find ruby here. A little bit of emerald up around the Anderson, aquamarine. Of course, the amethyst and the smoky quartz, the clear quartz. I mean, the tourmaline.
Mm-hmm.
All right here.
That's right. And because you're listening to WCRS right here in Greenwood this evening, we're here with the Vintager. The Vintager, you wanted to talk a little bit about turquoise. Did we talk about turquoise yet?
Yes.
Okay. About it being the national stone?
Yes.
We did. We talked about
that? Okay.
Okay. I couldn't remember. Were we off the air or on the air? It's so much excitement here this afternoon. And I am Ann Eller. You talked about so many neat things. I certainly hope you're going to come by here at Sharp Facets Gallery. Check out the gems. Check out the crystals that we have right here. We've got lots of them. And we've got more in the safe, in the vault. And we're going to be getting more of these things out. So you got to come by and see them. And we talked about emeralds and eyesight. We've got some gorgeous emeralds here, too. So, Vintager, as always, Jeff, my one and only, it's been a joy having you here this afternoon. Thanks for imparting some knowledge.
Oh, thank you.
Okay. You want to do this next week?
I'll probably be here.
Okay. Sounds good, folks. Hey, I'm Ann Eller here with the Vintager. This is WCRS right here in Greenwood. Bye-bye, everybody.